Okay, welcome everyone to the session on robotics and how we're all about to get fired. So firstly, I just want to say I think it's really an exciting time for robotics and automation given all of these new advances in like artificial intelligence and machine learning. So I thought this would be a really, really interesting session, and I'm sure it will be. So we've got Mark and Adam here from Deloitte. And Gloria was an apology. So I'll just quickly go through their bios. Mark is a manager in Deloitte Actuarial. He grew up in South Africa and then he spent a few years working in the UK. He has experience in a wide range of areas, including life insurance, reinsurance, banking, and GI statistics. He is,
General statistics.
That's my bias. Sorry, general statistical analysis. He has managed actuarial audits, regulatory reviews, reporting, pricing, business planning, M&A due diligence, independent expert and transformation work within life insurance and reinsurance. So that's quite a lot. Adam is a director within the Automate practice in Deloitte, so that's not an actuarial section. And he focuses on delivering automation solutions such as robotic process automation, which is RPA, to clients looking for new and innovative ways to drive improvement into their teams. He started his career in software delivery, and then he quickly learned how technology can assist businesses and its customers. Over his career, he spent time driving continuous improvement programs, which led to exposure to seeing firsthand how technologies such as robotics can give business teams a new tool to help them do their jobs more efficiently, effectively, and accurately. So before moving on, the format here is that we'll talk for something like 40 minutes and then we'll go to the floor for questions. And I just need to remind everyone to please walk up to the microphone to ask your question. And when you do, please say your name and the company that you work for, because it's all being recorded. So I'm going to start by handing over to Mark, and he's been asked to address the question of how is this going to make us all think differently?
So good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for coming to this talk. I know there was a lot of competition for this session. I myself probably would have been somewhere else if I wasn't presenting. But thanks all for coming. So how is this going to make you think differently? I think we're entering a world, and I'll talk more about it, obviously, as we get into the topic, but of different operating models. And I think we need to start thinking as actuaries where we spend our time and what tasks we do that actually are less value-adding and can potentially be taken over or automated by robots. So it's getting us to think differently about where we focus our time and what tools we can use potentially to help us focus our time more appropriately. So obviously that's the robotic side. Adam, as Dean said, is a director in our Automate practice. So he's going to be here to help with Q&A at the end because he's obviously got a lot more practical experience in this. I don't really have any. So you'll be able to direct all your questions to him at the end. So a little bit of context. Automation is obviously nothing new. Automation of tasks and jobs, it's been happening for a couple of centuries. If we look back at, for example, industrial revolutions, historically, obviously, it's been a lot more automation of manual labor. So blue-collar workers have been impacted a lot more. But in recent years, we've seen the shift actually to automating some white-collar jobs. So a lot of white-collar professionals are starting to be impacted and at an exponentially increasing rate. So what are we going to talk about today? So brief background to what is robotic process automation, that's RPA. We're going to talk about why you would use it, so what are the benefits of using robotic process automation, and then we'll look at how to decide what processes are suitable for automation, and then I'll show a bit of a video, a demonstration of robotic process automation in action, just so you can get an idea of what it is. Then we'll look at where it can be applied within both insurance processes and then more specifically within actuarial processes. And we did a survey, which we sent out a few weeks ago through the Actuaries Institute. So I'm hoping the number of people here who responded to that. I think we got about 100 responses, so, you know, enough to probably get an idea. I wouldn't say it's large enough to necessarily be statistically credible, but enough to get a sense. So we'll go through some of those results, which show where you guys believe you're at, where your organizations are at with regards to automation adoption, and where you want to be, and what are some of the obstacles that may be in your way. So we're going to show those results. And then finally, we're going to look at what does this mean for you in your career, what does this mean for your organizations, and what are the actuarial implications. And forgive me if I go through it relatively quickly, but we do have a lot of content, and I do want to make sure we leave time to have some Q&A with Adam. So, what is robotic process automation? It's basically computer-coded software that it replaces what a human does and how a human interacts with a computer. So it copies whatever a human can do, click by click, keyboard stroke by keyboard stroke. It pretty much replicates and automates our interaction with a computer. So it works cross-functions, cross-applications, pretty much enables interaction across multiple different IT applications, and it's used to automate repetitive rules-based tasks. So RPA isn't necessarily a physical walking, talking robot that's going to come up to you and strangle you or do something like that. It's not necessarily physical, and it is not robotic. Pure robotic process automation is not artificial intelligence, but we will see when we look at the maturity curve as we get along the more complex and intelligent levels of automation, that's when we start getting towards artificial intelligence. Robotic process automation is carried out by a robot or a so-called bot, otherwise known as a bot. And a bot is a configurable piece of software which is set up to perform the task that you assign it and you control it to do. So typically a bot will run an end-to-end process which may involve a number of subtasks. And depending on how complex the process is, you can actually add multiple or additional bots to tackle a very complex process. And when you've got multiple bots working together, that's sort of known as a virtual workforce. So obviously the workforce of the future is going to be your human workforce plus your virtual workforce, and that's going to give us what we think the future workforce is going to look like. So how does RPA fit within your organization? Pretty much reports to the same team leaders, which is your sort of functional managers, and it's controlled or, you know, overseen by a technical manager or a robot manager, which deals with a lot of the mechanics. So otherwise fits in like a normal team member. As I've alluded, there are different levels of automation, and here's just one view of different sort of tools, techniques, and operating model changes which are going to help augment or replace the current workforce. So you can see all the way on the left you've got pure operating model changes, outsourcing and offshoring. But as you get further up the curve, those tools become more complex but less mature at this point at least. And if we group them into three sort of main buckets, at the bottom your robotic process automation, cognitive and artificial intelligence, we can basically say that robotic process automation mimics human actions and decisions. So, as we said, used for rules-based processes such as invoice processing or just copy-pasting, and it basically takes structured data to do simple tasks. Then you've got your more intelligent or cognitive automation, which mimics human judgment. So not just your action, but actually a bit of judgment as well. So, and that can be used for processes requiring judgment, like scanning through commercial contracts or something. And so it pretty much takes unstructured data and it can convert it to some structured format in order to carry out other levels, other types of automation. And then at the end, we get to artificial intelligence, which full-scale artificial intelligence is probably still a bit away, and that's really augmenting human intelligence. So systems that pretty much completely replicate human interactions. And you can see some examples of tools at the bottom. These are non-actuarial tools, but they're just tools out there in the world. So, examples. Here are some examples of different tools and softwares that are being used by financial services firms around the world. And just to give an example of sort of the art of the possible of what's out there. So SoftBank, which isn't a bank despite its name, have developed something called Pepper the Robot. Now, I know we said earlier that robots typically aren't physical. Well, that's a picture of Pepper at the bottom. And that's really a physical bot which helps interact face-to-face with customers. So Mizuho Financial Group in Japan have used Pepper the Robot to be the front and to help welcome customers, inform them, and amuse customers, and it can actually speak to customers in a variety of different languages. Now, a lot of these examples I'm going through, in fact, I think all of them, are actually not pure robotic process automation. These are more on the intelligence side of things. And as I go through the presentation, we're sort of going to be flipping a bit forwards and backwards between intelligent automation and pure robotic process automation. So those are your physical bots. And these are all, the first three are kind of your front office functions, so automation of some front office, whereas the last one is more back office. So what are the front office functions? Virtual bots. So that's in distribution and frontline sales, for example. So those are bots, chat bots. For example, Lena Life Insurance in Korea has a chatbot that's actually being used, and they aim to replace insurance brokers and agents with this chatbot. Or Next Insurance in the USA actually has launched the world's first full sign-up via Facebook Messenger. So they're using a bot, a chatbot on Facebook Messenger, where you can go, you can chat to it, it comes back to you, ask you questions, and you can actually sign up for insurance through this chatbot. Amelia by IPsoft, so that's more on the customer service side, and Amelia is very, very smart and is able to actually just, you can feed it all different technical manuals, it can absorb those, and when someone asks a question, it can search the manual for the right answer and give you that answer. Alternatively, if it doesn't know that, it can escalate by doing an internet search. And if it still can't find the answer, then maybe it escalates onto a human. And then finally, if we look at back office, IBM Watson have developed the IBM Watson Explorer, which is more on the artificial intelligence side of things. And Fukoku Mutual Life in Japan is using this IBM Watson to actually calculate payouts to policyholders. So you scan some medical certificates, hospital data, prescription information, and it can actually automatically then calculate payouts to policyholders. And controversially, Fukoku Life got rid of 34 of their claims assessment staff this year and replaced them with IBM Watson. And they said that their $1.75 million investment, that they'll be able to recoup that in less than 2 years due to the $1.2 million annual salary that they've saved. And I actually read yesterday that Zurich are actually doing the same. I think this is Zurich in Europe, that they're using artificial intelligence to decide personal injury claims. And what did they say? They saved 40,000 work hours in the process, and speeding up claim processing times to just 5 seconds. So why would you use RPA? So if we look at some common organizational or operating model challenges that a lot of organizations are facing, such as cost pressures, requirements for reliable processes and quality output, especially when it comes to compliance and management information, growth ambitions and ability to be nimble and to scale at will, and generally aiming for sort of low-cost models, operating models. And we look at some of the more traditional solutions out there, so your process improvement, outsourcing, offshoring, core systems replacement and system integrations, pushing more of the workload back to the customer, so moving to digital and more self-service means actually taking the workload off your staff. If we look at those and compare them to RPA, RPA is actually a new alternative which can be implemented faster, more cheaply, and is more flexible than some of these more traditional solutions. So what are some of the benefits of robotic process automation? And these are benefits versus using a human to do the task, as well as benefits compared to other solutions. And you can see increased processing speed. So we all know that computers operate faster than humans, and computers generally don't suffer much from fatigue. So they don't need coffee breaks, they don't need smoke breaks, they don't need lunch breaks, they can just continue to work through. In addition to that, reduction in error. So again, same story, humans are very prone to error, whereas machines a lot less so. And in line with that, that's obviously increased compliance. So not only reducing errors, But because there is an audit trail of everything that's done, and you get fewer rogue computers going off and trying to steal money from a company or trying to do something dodgy, there's generally increased compliance as a result. Flexibility and scalability. So it is a lot more easier to scale up a robotic workforce than it is to scale up a human workforce. And, you know, when there's high demand, it's very difficult to just hire someone or fire someone, but it's a lot more easier to just onboard an extra robot or keep it idle and, you know, for a period of time when it's not needed. So it's a lot more scalable, less invasive. So it doesn't involve huge IT system overhauls. It actually works with your current environment, and it integrates with your current user interface. So comparing robotic process automation to a couple of those other solutions we mentioned, it's obviously very clear if we look at cost versus risk, and then the size of the bubble is kind of the size of the benefit or impact on the firm. IT transformations are obviously have the biggest impact on a firm, and generally, if we can take our old legacy systems and transform them and upgrade them, that's where we're going to get, you know, the biggest, I wouldn't call it the biggest bang for our buck, but we'll definitely see the biggest change in a positive way. But obviously, their IT transformations are very high risk and high cost as well. If we look at some of the low cost, like offshoring, it's obviously, yes, it's low cost, but that's about all offshoring is. It doesn't offer much other benefit. But if you look at RPA, it is kind of that sweet spot. It is low cost, low risk, but also medium benefit as well. So here's just a quote showing comparing offshoring to robotic process automation tools. And if people use offshoring because they're cheap, well, clearly robotic process automation is a lot cheaper. And so I spoke about the survey that we asked, and we said to people, what is your view on robotics automation, and allowed people to select multiple responses. And what you can see is that clearly the majority of people thought that it is a useful tool. Now, remembering these are actuaries that responded, but the big prize is going to come with cognitive and artificial intelligence technologies. And we're going to echo that sentiment a bit later on when we look at the actuarial context. And thankfully, very few people said that it's a fad that will disappear in a few years. Yes. Otherwise, we'd be over 100%. So, how do you decide what is a suitable process to automate? So you can go through a bit of a process, and this is, take it for what it is, but it's go through a process of asking a number of questions. Say, does your process involve manual interrogation of multiple systems, rekeying or resubmitting of data, so copying from one place to another, moving from one system to another, consolidation of data sources from different parts or different systems, zero subjective inputs. As I say, pure robotic process automation is not intelligent. It's purely rules-based and needs to have no subjective input. And obviously repetitive data gathering. If you answer sort of yes to all of those, then that's your sweet spot for some quick RPA wins. And here's just, again, some examples. As we've said, anything that's rules-based or repetitive, like certain shared services, your finance processes, ops, HR, and procurement, within those you can look at the sub-processes, and there's often a lot of processes that are high volume, repetitive, and rules-based, and therefore are good candidates. So just to give you an idea of robotic process automation in action, this is a video that was produced by Deloitte, and it will just give you an idea. And as you can see, it's interacting with the system pretty much like a human would. Okay, so hopefully that just shows you what a robot can do, and it's pretty much, it's the same view as a human, but it's just doing it automatically. So where can, now we're starting to funnel more down from just the general tools and more into actuarial. And, well, firstly, insurance. So here's an insurance process map, and I know, I apologize, a number of those boxes are pretty small. We've got some insurance and finance operations. Don't worry too much if you can't read the individual boxes. Treat it more as a heat map. So dark blue are your likely high usage of RPA, through down to the lighter blues, which is medium and low, and no usage of RPA. So this just gives you an idea of some processes. And there may be, again, it may be subtasks within those processes that are highly susceptible and not necessarily the whole process itself. But it just gives you an idea when you go through the insurance process of what tasks are susceptible to RPA, and you can see that the more admin processes that don't require any judgment are highly susceptible, such as, you know, producing reports, consolidating information, policy admin, etc. Those are the ones that are more susceptible. If we look where actuaries tend to be scattered throughout this process, and here's just a few areas where we tend to get involved, we may get involved in more, but things like your pricing, product development, experience analyses, stat reporting, risk management, forecasting, budgeting, etc. You can see that a lot of them are actually medium to low likely usage of RPA. Now, what that means is that actually the real gains when it comes to actuarial, like you guys all told me earlier, is actually going to be when it comes to cognitive automation, not necessarily for the pure robotic process automation. So, and the question is then, why is that? That's because actuarial work tends to be more of an art than a science. So most of you have gone through long, grueling qualification processes, as well as many years of on-the-job learning, and you can't necessarily just replace that with a robot that easily. So our job can't be done end-to-end out of a textbook. And what makes us stand out typically is professionalism. So again, quite difficult to teach a robot professionalism, but we deal with complex professional matters as actuaries, and professionalism is needed because we actually need to exercise judgment, and we also need peer review in some of the work we do. So this basically sets us apart from some of the other processes, but naturally there are going to be areas where even pure robotic process automation might help within our jobs, and then there are going to be areas as well where more intelligent forms of automation will be able to assist. So if we look specifically at some actuarial examples, and we're not going to talk necessarily about specific softwares because I know the conference wanted it to be kind of more company and program agnostic. But if we look in general at some of the things that are available at the moment that either are possible to be done or will be possible soon, if you look throughout the actuarial process, so data, model, reporting, there are elements of that that can definitely be automated in some form or another. Now, I say whether that's pure robotic automation or whether that is more intelligent forms of automation. So firstly is data. So obviously, extracting data from admin systems. Often actuarial processes start with extracting data from admin or accounting systems, and a lot of that extraction actually can be done automatically. Data can be extracted automatically. It can be manipulated and prepared for input into a model. So, you know, can be transformed into a model point file, or you can have different fields being calculated or transformed or moved accordingly. Data integrity checks can be carried out, so reviewing data for accuracy and completeness, and then flagging any errors or issues or missing data where it finds them, and then either attempting to correct these where it can, or where it can learn what, you know, what the right correction is, or alternatively flagging these to a human for manual intervention. And then reconciling data to other sources or to previous year's data. On the modeling side, there are tools out there that can actually automatically run projections, summarize, check, and group results according to your different needs and according to what output you need. There are a number of range of pre-built steps so that actually the entire end-to-end process can work without human intervention, but it can act as workflow management, so it can dictate where human intervention is required, if it is required. I've also been told there are tools out there that can help model development factors and patterns. So if you put in, where that's required for reserving purposes, for example, and you put in some of your claims data, you tell the system which techniques you want to apply, those techniques can be automatically applied to help come up with some of your development factors, and possibly even have a first stab at what the assumption might be. So this is either stuff that is currently possible or is going to be possible soon. On the reporting side, it's really governance and documentation. So documenting, let's say, what assumptions you've selected, or documenting results, providing audit trails. So that's really important, as we said, for compliance, but it's also important for operational risk. So when one person leaves the business and you don't know what's been done, there is an audit trail showing you step by step, so that knowledge never really gets lost as to what's happened. It's easy for other people to pick it up and get involved. Providing issues logs of where errors were found, and then natural language generation can actually be used to generate reports. So whether it's quarterly, monthly, whatever, if it involves taking tables from spreadsheets, lifting them into Word documents, and on the more intelligent side, really actually just trying to have a first stab at what some of the commentary might be, that's natural language generation, and that can help in us in generating or giving first cuts of actuarial reports. So back to the survey. We asked you guys what the current level of automation was that's been adopted in your organization in each of the following areas. From 1, which is no automation, through to 5, which is full automation. So you're a robot yourself. And luckily no one is a robot yet, but there hasn't been high adoption of automation all around. And the couple of areas where there's been some trials, data warehousing, underwriting, reporting, but as you can see, the extent of automation is very low at the moment. In line with low levels of automation, there's obviously, they haven't been very effective yet because there hasn't been much of it. And the areas that have been, I don't know, close to somewhat effective are the same areas we saw earlier where people have trialed. So at least where you've trialed, it's been somewhat effective. So we asked the question, can your organization benefit from more automation or use of robotics technology? And no surprises that 95% said yes. So given that most of you thought you could benefit from more automation, we then asked the question, well, where? And where would you like to see the greatest adoption of automation in the next 5 years? So you've got your green bars, which is in 5 years' time, and comparing those to what the current responses were, which is the grey bars. And interestingly, it's across the board. Everyone wants to see automation in a whole number of areas. And if we look at some of the areas that show really the highest levels highest desirable levels is similarly data warehousing, reserving, and reporting. Here, not going to spend too much on this. This was showing those same results, but split by the type of insurance company the respondent worked for, and we cut out non-insurers. So this was whether you're a standalone general insurer or life insurer or conglomerate. And the one interesting thing to point out here is that general insurers want reporting to be almost fully automated within the next 5 years. So, to what extent do your processes therefore need to be re-engineered as part of automation adoption? And nearly 60% of large and medium-sized organizations believe that they need end-to-end or significant process re-engineering. In other words, that it is a good opportunity to rethink processes. So there really is little point in automating a broken process. Automation is not the panacea. It's not going to solve all your problems. In order to automate a process, it really needs to be a good process first. And when you look at smaller organizations, a number of them said only re-engineer where there's significant benefit, or interestingly, many said they're actually not sure, which means that either they don't have the capacity to think too much about it, or perhaps that they don't have a robotic strategy. So given there hasn't been much automation yet, we asked the question, well, what are the obstacles that actually may hinder your adoption of automation? And again, you're allowed to select more than one response. So across the board, there were a number of options that were selected by many people, but if we look at some of the key ones, it is, everyone being too busy in their roles, legacy systems or pushback from IT. Interestingly, too costly to develop and implement, which perhaps implies that people don't really understand what robotic process automation is, or maybe Dale was just referring more to the cognitive side of things. And then also, perhaps, lack of catalyst from senior management, or lack of awareness. So hopefully lack of awareness we're addressing today. So what does this mean for me? What does this mean for my organization? What does this mean for my career? So Deloitte did a global annual millennial survey, which surveyed almost 8,000 millennials across 30 countries, and they tried to get a sentiment of what millennials think about their future. And what they found is that they're actually pretty anxious about their future, in particular when it comes to things like automation, with 40% seeing automation as posing a threat to their jobs, 44% believing there'll be less demand for their skills, and 51% believing that they're going to have to retrain. So we asked a similar question of you guys. How do you feel about the impact of automation on your jobs? And 97% of responses were actually neutral, positive, or highly optimistic, which perhaps implies that there are not many millennials that responded to our survey. So whilst it is encouraging to see everyone thinking positively about the impact of automation on their jobs, we also need to be aware that there are many jobs, and including other professions, that are being disrupted by automation of all kinds, including intelligent automation. And we're not entirely immune either. So we need to consider that this is not about replacing professionals. It's not about replacing us or our jobs. It's more about augmenting our roles and enhancing our roles. And so we need to consider how can our profession be impacted, and how do we evolve in light of automation in the workforce? So you all know about it's happening to doctors, it's happening to lawyers. And as actuaries, actually, if you look at our history, we've also moved with the tech time. So if you look many years before my time, we were actually doing manual calculations, pen and paper, perhaps using our yellow tables. I don't think those have changed in the last 100 years of mortality tables. But then we've evolved over time to using electronic calculators. Then we started using computers. And now we even have purpose-built computer programs to do some of our calculations. And many programs have been developed to automate, you know, processes for valuation, pricing, reserving, forecasting, etc. So the truth is that historically the focus of automation, if you look at that trend over the years, has been more on the calculation engine themselves and how do we automate the calculation. But as we get more intelligent forms of automation, we're actually going to be focusing more on automating the other ends of that process. So following on from that, the time that we actually spend at this point, if you look today, we probably spend the bulk of our time in the middle, in that blue box, on computation and distillation. So really modeling and results collation, data collection, data manipulation, etc. A lot of our time is on the actual mechanics, and less of our time is spent on either end. So hypothesizing or ideation or strategizing. So, for example, what products to sell, what markets to sell to, and on the other side, decisions and actions. So as a result of your calculations, what should you do as a result? So hopefully going forward, where A, more of the dark blue is automated, but B, we also bring a bit of automation into one and three, it will allow us as actuaries to spend more of our time on the value-adding ends of the actuarial process rather than in the center where we're spending a lot of our time today. So finally, we asked everyone in the survey, how can we prepare for more widespread adoption of automation or robotics in your organization? This is as actuaries, and we took the results and we sort of tried to group them into common themes. And some of the common themes were, firstly, embrace the change and don't be afraid. So let's not cling to our spreadsheets as much as possible. We need to realize that actually we can add value elsewhere, and perhaps we should be working out how we can get rid of the more mundane tasks to enable us to focus more on the value add. So that is really understanding the possibility. So if you don't understand the art of the possible, you'll never try to do something. So again, hopefully attending this presentation is the first step in that, but once you know what's possible, that's the first step in actually getting something done. Upskilling to capitalize on opportunities. So that's both upskilling on the robotics process, again, understanding what is possible, what is out there, but it's also upskilling so that we improve on our judgment, we improve on our soft skills, and we improve on our ability to focus on the other ends of the actuarial process and less so on just the calculation engine. And finally, focusing on value-adding activities. That's the same thing. It's been mentioned a number of times already at the conference now, to give ourselves a seat at the table, we need to be adding value other than just being able to crunch a number. So that's what you guys told me, and I hope that this has been useful. But please do ask questions. As I said, we do have Adam, who's an expert on robotics, and he's got a lot of practical experience implementing in a number of different firms. So thank you for attending, and yeah, we'll move to discussion.
Thanks for that. I thought that was a really, really good talk, and you touched on a lot of relevant things, put it in context, and also kind of dispelled some of the myths or the aspects that we shouldn't be really thinking about. So here's a question. And just to remind you, please just say your name and the company that you work for.
Hi, this is Gary Hemka from ANU. So two questions. One is probably an observation. So one of the few slides you showed the millennial responses and the actuarial responses or the professional responses. Is it because of the age difference, and what is your hypothesis on why such widely different responses between the two groups from a psychological behavioral perspective?
That's an interesting question. Why would the, so again, yeah, maybe it's an age thing. Maybe it is who responded. It also could be the nature of the people who responded. So the millennial survey was sent out to 8,000 millennials across 30 countries, people starting their career, perhaps all different jobs, professions, versus actuaries who we believe we're highly skilled, we believe we're not easily replaced. And there is some truth to that. So it could be an element. Well, I definitely wouldn't call it arrogance, but I know that we believe that we can add value, and therefore we are, whilst parts of the process we do can be replaced or augmented, I think we can't be replaced entirely.
I think in addition to that, I guess a lot more applications of the types of automations are coming to fruition now. And so the younger generation is starting to see this, and they're saying, oh, this actually is possible. Typically, maybe you've sort of thought of certain industries like maybe like the medical industry is, you know, impossible to automate because a doctor's always got to be there. And that may be the case for the most part, but when you start to see, you know, software solutions of whatever nature, it doesn't need to be RPA, going out there that sort of take away these types of activities, it's sort of a little bit confronting. I have seen, I was in Singapore late last year, early this year, and there's active campaigns talking to I guess millennials about how they need to be retraining and learning. I guess, you know, it doesn't matter what you're doing, what type of focus, but learn, I guess, the software aspect too, because a big part of your jobs in the future will contain some of this too. So be prepared as opposed to the tide will take you. That was your first question.
Yep. No, second question. Sorry. Second question is, so I work in a university and I recently had some issues with processes which could be easily converted to RPA.
Mm.
And so how do they contact you? Whom do they contact?
You come see me after this. But I guess, well, yeah, if you know someone in the industry, you can contact someone. But Google, like everyone does, Google search, and you look for blogs and people in the industry that are sort of doing this type of work. I guess we've written papers that we've got all sorts of responses from people all around the world wanting to know about it, and that's sort of stemming from that. Mm. I'll talk to you afterwards.
Hi, Mark Schneider from Solvexia.
Oh.
Really interesting presentation. Thank you very much. I think you touched on the fact that RPA can mean a lot of different things to different people. It's not a panacea, especially when you look at what the traditional RPA is, which is more like keystroke automation. So a lot of the examples that you showed there on the left-hand side were keystroke automation tools, and then on the right brought in the artificial intelligence. Mm. And there is an inclination to think that everything can be done with keystroke automation, and certainly in terms of mechanical tasks.
Yep.
But there are a whole raft of tasks that either need to be done through traditional IT, excuse me, or other tools that are not keystroke automators.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you can have software that, I guess a keystroke automator is like putting that robot into your organization.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other tools that are like creating virtual factories with production lines. So it's replacing putting the process in a new factory, a virtual factory, if you like. So I think there's a big risk. We see this in organizations where they say, we've got one of the keystroke automation tools. We can do everything with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot more that can be filled in those boxes, but not necessarily with the same tool. Different tools will suit different tasks. And so when looking at RPA, I encourage people to keep an open mind as to which is the right tool for the task. Keystroke automation tasks tend to be the simpler ones, but done very frequently,
mm-hmm.
often at a transaction-type level, mm-hmm. whereas other tasks that can be automated, like, say, an end-to-end actuarial valuation,
mm-hmm.
Are not as well suited to transaction level automation, and you need that factory, that virtual factory, to do that.
Mm.
So I appreciate any comments and thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think you're right. This isn't a one-stop sort of solution that's going to solve everyone's problems. You do need to be very conscious of the process or the activity that you're looking to automate and how much of it you may want to automate it from the get-go. You may decide only to take bite-sized chunks and sort of go down that path. And in my experience, I've even not gone down an RPA solution because we thought that from a client's perspective, there was a better way to solving the problem. It's not all about just putting, you know, robots into a client's environment. It's about solving their problems. I think if you sort of go back to the one of the slides that Mark spoke about, I guess you're right. Typically, we do look for certain types of criteria that are very well suited to automation, and I guess companies should try to stay adhere to those, because it does become a little bit problematic from a management point of view when you try to do things that the robots are maybe not typically good at. And I think until you either re-engineer your processes, which is probably a little bit later, you probably should stick to certain types of processes to automate, because that's what the software is really good at. Any other questions?
I think that last bell was possibly the last one, but let's do one more question and then...
Bruce Lambert from AMP. You talk about the upsides, the advantages of RPA, you know, more efficient, lower error rate. What are your view around some of the downsides of it? You know, is there more cyber risk? Is there more process concentration risk? What's the flip side of that?
So I think the main risk that comes to mind is obviously getting something wrong with a robot. Doing it 10, 20, 50 times quicker could potentially create, you know, a bigger issue if you implement it incorrectly. And typically the way that you can try and mitigate that is by, you know, similar to the software delivery lifecycle, there's, let's say, a robotic delivery lifecycle where you try to tease out a lot of those unknowns through the development of your robot, and then the piloting of that bot before you let it run free in your production environment on your customers. So that exponential sort of ripple effect is probably the main thing that comes to mind. From a cyber perspective, the way that we at Deloitte do our implementations is we engage not only our IT teams who manage all of their existing physical or virtual sort of workstations or within their own security environment. So we don't take the robots and plonk them in, you know, a different location. It's all within the company ecosystem, which is under their security constraints and risks and protocols. And it's just really, it could be something as simple as that desktop, but obviously under their conditions, you would need to potentially lock that away so that while it's working, people don't just come in and start looking at data. So you may only have certain people with certain access to sort of minimise that. And the way that we try also mitigate that is engaging the risk teams from the organisation to walk them through what the solution is, how we're going to apply it, and then have them call out what they think the problems are, and don't just sort of try avoid them, try to face into them and then solve them jointly, so that we you know, in 6 months' time, there's not this big newspaper article and then, you know, things are not good. So.
Thanks, guys. Please join me in thanking them for this great talk. And we've got a couple of bottles of